These Days.
Kids These Days.
This is Kids These Days.
So very much is happening in the minds and bodies of our youngest kids. From birth to age 3, infants and toddlers are developing in fundamental and life-shaping ways. They're learning to sit up, crawl, and walk. They're learning to think and to speak. They're learning to connect with others in our world. Today on Kids These Days, we're exploring this period of early learning and breaking down what we should all know about this important time in our kids' lives. Also this hour, we report on the many early learning efforts going on statewide, and we find out about one organization that helps people whose loved ones have special needs. All that and more this hour. Hi everyone, I'm Shanna Sheehy and this is Kids These Days. Today we're talking about infants and toddlers. Did you know that during the first 3 years of life, the brain grows more than at any other time? Recently, many organizations in our state have launched efforts to inform caregivers about some of the typical to be expected things that young kids should be doing if they're developing normally. We're going to hear from some of those people working on those campaigns this hour. This is your opportunity to ask a question about the baby or toddler in your life. We encourage your participation. Contact us by emailing us, write to mail@kidsthesedays.org, or comment on our website or through our Facebook page. Here with me today in the studio are two women who work in early childhood. Erin Canavy is the program manager for the Early Intervention Program for the State of Alaska's Office of Children's Services. She got her start in early intervention by working with children diagnosed with autism and has a master's degree in special education. She also serves on the National Board for Infant and Toddlers Coordinator Association. And Erin herself is the mother of a four-year-old. Thanks for being with us, Erin.
Thank you.
And also with us is Dr. Donna Galbraith. She is a family physician who works for South Central Foundation in Anchorage. Her practice includes traveling to remote villages to deliver health care and improve access to health care there. Currently, she is the Quality Assurance Medical Director for South Central Foundation, and she also is on the board of directors for Aetna Incorporated and is the president for the Association of American Indians. And Dr. Galbraith is also a grandmother and a mother. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And I'd like to start actually with something that you were involved with, Donna. You are featured in a new video that was produced by Best Beginnings. That's an early childhood development organization and advocacy organization here in Alaska. And it's called Babies on Track. Maybe we can just start this conversation right there. Tell us a little bit about this informational video. You are a big part of it. You're the person who's there talking about some of the development type things that we're going to be discussing today.
Well, the video is created to help people understand how important it is to interact with children at a very young age, or actually from birth on. So the things that are important to do is to actually talk with your child, play with your child, you know, eye contact, cooing, all the things that you see parents do. But we've discovered that the brain is developing at this time. And so connections are being laid down. So the more the interaction that occurs with a child, the more connections that occur in the brain, which results in the brain being very capable of learning and social interaction. So this is a crucial time in development.
And when you say interaction, maybe you can really break that down so that we all understand what that means, because there are lots of ways to be around a baby or a toddler up to age 3. So what do you mean by interaction?
Well, that's actually a good question, because sometimes parents get scared and think they're not doing the right thing. But interacting with your child in any way is the right thing. So when you're holding your baby and looking in its eyes, you know, like a newborn, you'll stare in its eyes and talk. And as the baby grows and starts making noises, you might mimic the noises back. And so each age has a different opportunity for interaction. So like as the child gets old enough to actually be able to look at a book, you can be flipping through pages with a child. You know, they make the soft books for babies, too, so they can play with them and they can see the different colors and
chew
shapes.
On them.
Yeah, and chew on
right.
them. and that's learning, too. I mean, so they're hearing things, they're tasting things, they're feeling things. All of that stuff is really important. So anything, any exposure with that the child can have is important. It doesn't have to be, you know, some fancy toy. It can be, you know, a spoon.
So the interaction piece, like you say, it's, you know, parents maybe or caregivers maybe say, am I doing the right thing? And you say it doesn't have to be that complicated.
No, it's not. It's just the day-to-day interactions, the moment-to-moment interactions that you have with your child.
Erin Kennavy, how about your interpretation of this idea of interacting with a child? What might you give as advice to caregivers in people who are taking care of kids who are infants all the way through age 3 in terms of interacting with them?
Well, I totally agree with what Donna said, that interaction, it's incredibly important, and it changes from age to age. And I think caregivers just need to know that whatever interactions they can provide that are healthy and connecting with kids are good ones, and they don't have to be fancy. They don't have to be, you know, necessarily structured all the time, but just being there with kids and responding to their cues. Mm-hmm. Serve and return, kind of.
Serve and return. So
the idea that a child might give an opportunity or have start an interaction with you, and our role is to really kind of notice that cue and respond in kind.
Well, before we talk any more about Babies on Track in particular, any of the infant learning program type stuff that comes through your Office of Children's Services, Erin, I'd like to share this first. The importance of a baby's earliest years is the subject of a lot of recent research, and a handful of outreach efforts across the state aim to get that message out to parents and caregivers. Kids These Days contributor Jessica Cochran reports on some of them, including a video starring one of our guests, Dr. Donna Galbraith.
Jamail Johnson works with the State Department of Health and Social Services on the Learn the Signs, Act Early campaign to help parents and caregivers know the developmental milestones for young children and know when to take their concerns to a healthcare provider if they notice a delay. Last fall, the state mailed information packets out to 22,000 families. It was a pilot project of the CDC and coordinates with the state's Child Find efforts to identify kids who might need some extra services early on. The idea isn't to freak parents out about their children's development, but just to make them aware and open up a conversation if there are concerns. Because as Johnson and others say, earlier is better.
Research has found, and we just know this to be true, that earlier is better as far as finding developmental delays in children. So the earlier is considered under age 3. So we wanted to get information to families as early as possible for children at a very young age. So the babies that would have received, or the families that would have received those packets, would have had children aged 6 months to 2.5 years.
That earlier is better message is at the heart of several other outreach efforts in the state, targeted at caregivers of all young children, not only those who might have a developmental delay. Between February 25th and March 4th, more than 130 sites, from libraries to workplaces to private homes, will premiere a new movie, Babies on Track. The 14-minute video features parents and children doing activities together and talking as they go, washing dishes, folding laundry, or, like this father and son, heading out together on a fishing boat.
Big baskets, pick up the fish, and then they slide into that little part right there, and then they slide into that basket, and then you come up with a boat like this. And you reach in there and you take that fish.
The movie was filmed in 3 locations in Alaska and was produced by local filmmaker Mary Kotsky. It's all designed to get one simple message across. The best way to help a baby's brain development is to communicate. The idea for the movie came from 2 similar films, one designed for Latino families in Chicago that was so engaging, rural Alaskans loved it and wanted their own version. Babies on Track is a project of Best Beginnings. Coordinator Barbara Brown says everyone who attends one of the premieres will receive a copy of the DVD and 2 board books full of pictures, but no words. One features Alaska baby faces, and the other Alaska-themed objects like boots and geese. That gives caregivers more to talk about.
Parents use more words, and there's more conversation with wordless books than books that have words. When little kid books have words, see, spot, jump. That's what the parent says as they're reading. when they have a picture of a dog, they say, oh, do you see the dog? Does that look like the dog we know? What do dogs say? And a whole conversation starts. The whole premise behind why we're doing this project is that we want parents to talk to their kids.
In Unalakleet, babies will walk a red carpet to the premiere and sit in special seating. In the Tok area, the folks who distribute books through Imagination Library will hold four different premiere events. Carrie Beeman is coordinating them.
The video talks about how to keep kids on track, to talk, respond, ask questions, connect, you know, keep at it, sing and tell stories. Thought, wow, track, that would be a great theme, you know, for the event. So we are going to have activities about with tracks, like footprints. So we're going to have all sorts of different activities for making a footprint keepsake. And the Parks Department had sent us a tracks kit, different animal tracks. So we're going to utilize those during the event.
A premiere will also be held in Bethel, where Mary Beth Green is coordinator of early childhood programs for the Lower Kuskokwim School District. LKSD has several preschool programs and family outreach efforts. Green says some of their children start school without enough words in their vocabularies, so most of their efforts focus on language and literacy development. They pass out activity cards, developed by Best Beginnings, with ideas for activities to do with your kids, written in both Yupik and English. Under one grant, they have written and developed more than 80 children's books.
We're writing books, picture books, about the culture here, using what we have right here, maybe one on making fireweed jelly or fish, different types of nets that are used. And we're having them translated. Sometimes we have them first in Yupik and we translate them. It depends on who's making the book. We translate them into English, and then sometimes they're developed first in English, and then we also have them in Yupik.
The books are written by teachers or community members and illustrated with photographs or simple graphics, and then distributed to Head Start programs, preschools, and families. LKSD is also partnered with the Association of Alaska School Boards for family outreach efforts. Kids don't typically start school until age 5, but school boards are recognizing that preparing them for school starts much earlier. Bridget Smith is a community engagement educator for AASB. In January, she traveled to the LKSD region and helped host a few family nights, including at the prematernal home in Bethel, with the women there who were waiting to have their babies. At an event in Macoryuk, 50 out of 190 residents came.
Our book that we brought with us was An Orange in January. So here it was, January, and we brought all kinds of citrus fruit. And so we had the kids sampled it. You know, we had lemons and limes and tangerines. And so we had a chart so the kids could say which one they liked the best. We had all kinds of books that we were able to give away to families. And then we had a retired teacher who read aloud to the kids, and he was amazing. He was magical. He interacted for at least a half an hour with this picture book and Orange in January.
Mostly the movie premieres, the family nights, all these outreach efforts are designed to be fun, to get families doing things together, reading together, and most of all, talking about things together. I'm Jessica Cochran.
To find out more about Alaska's infant learning programs or where you can go to see a premiere of the new movie Babies on Track, head over to our website, that's kidsthesedays.org. We'll link you from there. We should also mention that one of the organizations mentioned in that story, the Association of Alaska School Boards, also funds this program. You're listening to Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Today's discussion is about the developmental milestones that little kids hit when they grow from infancy through toddlerhood to age 3. I'm having that conversation with Erin Canavy from the Office of Children's Services and Dr. Donna Galbraith, a physician at South Central Foundation. And Dr. Galbraith, since you are featured in Babies on Track, and we just heard about that, as well as some other outreach programs that are happening throughout the state, I wanted to invite you to add anything to the piece that we just heard Jessica provide.
I actually really liked hearing that. I didn't know about the Orange in January. That sounds really neat. So it creates a visual. And so actually having the different tasting of different fruit is pretty cool. So it's those interactions that I think are so important with children. And I love the story about the picture book, that it creates a conversation, because that is so important, just to have a conversation with a child, even if they don't understand. It's that interaction that you're having with a child, even if, you know, they don't understand all the words. It's very important. Having those interactions can't be replaced. So, you know, looking at TV or videos does not work at all. It has to be, you know, a person-to-person interaction in order to maximally develop the brain.
No, it's interesting that you mentioned that because you know, often kids do find themselves in front of some sort of entertainment like that, like a TV or a iPhone, for example, or any kind of smart device like that. But this isn't interacting. That's what I'm hearing you saying. It's not
correct.
The same as getting cues from a parent if you smile or if you cry and that kind of thing.
That's right. You have to learn those social cues, too. And so you got to lay down the right connections in your brain to figure out how to interact with people. If it's a video thing, if it's your iPhone, you're playing with it. You know, there's no cues back there. It's little pictures and buttons that you're interacting with, rather than looking at somebody's face and seeing what their response is to you, and learning how to, you know, talk and also say what your needs are as a child, and then the parent respond to you. All those things are really important for future development and future interactions with other human beings.
Right, other human beings. Erin Canavy, you're the program manager for the Early Intervention Program at the State of Alaska's Office of Children's Services, Office for Children's Services. Tell us a little bit about what your agency does in terms of outreach to families who have kids who are in this critical age range.
Sure. Well, the Early Intervention Program with the state is also known statewide as the Infant Learning Program, as you'd mentioned before. And one of our core missions is really to identify any children that might be experiencing delays and offer intervention and family support for their families. And so we take that mission critically, and we do our best to reach out into communities and offer those supports.
And I see, you know, I've been to your website and seen some of the resources that you offer there, and I see this repeat itself in lots of your printed materials and so forth, that learn the signs and act early. Learn the signs, act early. You talked about early identification. So, you know, describe for our listeners what that's all about, and, you know, how can caregivers be on the lookout for the things that are important to be noticing?
Well, and first I should say this was a partnership with our public health arm in the department. And so we heard from Jamail earlier, and it's an effort nationally by the Center for Disease Control, really looking at early identification of children with autism. In Alaska, we wanted to make it much more broad, and so to open the conversation for parents to be aware of all the developmental milestones, not just related to what might lead to an early diagnosis of autism, but really that we wanted to reach out to all families and make it as much as possible, make families and caregivers aware of what the milestones look like and what ages they might be expecting certain developmental milestones to happen, and just to offer that information to parents so that they feel empowered and know if and when they might want to reach out for some support. I mean, often in infant learning programs, they get calls from parents that want a screening because they simply don't know, is what they're doing normal? Are they on track? Are they keeping up developmentally? And right. So we wanted to kind of make that universally available.
Well, I have to say, you can get a hard copy of one of these booklets, but you can also find these detailed checklists that are online as well. And we will link you to that from kidsthesedays.org. But it's it's interesting, you know, the newborn to age three, there's developmental checklists that tell you as a caregiver the things to look for what babies would be doing during that time, gives you suggestions for the toys that you can make or buy that would help your child to make those advances that you're looking for, safety tips, what new experiences they might be having. It's a pretty complete way of looking at these different periods in a child's development and understanding, okay, this is normal. Okay, this is kind of what this checklist is all about. This thing that my child is doing is normal. And then, of course, the reverse of that, which is my child isn't doing this, maybe it's not normal. So, Erin, maybe you can tell listeners break down what those critical periods are from birth to age three, because if I remember correctly, there are these periods that are kind of designated by months. At first, the first year of life, it's kind of by months. You're looking to see a development in 3-month increments, more or less, right? Mm-hmm. And then it kind of becomes more like year to year once you get to 2 and 3. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, I also want to point out it's really important to emphasize that developments, the range of normal is large. And so you might have a child who's not meeting 1 out of 12 milestones at 6 or 8 months. And, you know, to take that into perspective, that kids really develop at different paces across different domains. And so not to be too concerned if, you know, your child isn't meeting every milestone at the specific month. But yeah, we do look, you know, for very young children, we're looking for specific developmental physical milestones, like being able to lift the head or being able to respond to the mother. And then as the child gets older, we're looking at different kinds of development, certainly verbal or communication would look very different with a 6-month-old, where you're expecting cues or some sort of simple responses, than from a 2-year-old, where you're starting to look at how many words they might know and if they're starting to put words together. And so it's important to know that, yeah, that it does change over time.
And you say that the spectrum of what's normal is really large. So that seems a little hard for me to reconcile. So you've got like the checklist, but then there's this range of what's normal. So when what advice would you give a caregiver for when to be concerned in that case?
Well, I think if you have a mile, you know, if you're looking at a checklist and you have a number of, you know, emerging skills or not yet emerging skills, I mean, I think it's okay to reach out and to ask your pediatrician or to call your infant learning provider and have a conversation. And again, I think these materials really were intended to make those conversations easier and to have a starting point, but that there are folks out there that have this knowledge that are willing to engage in this conversation with parents and who know how to individualize the materials based on, you know, what that child's experience or environment is as well.
Mm-hmm. And how good of a measurement is it to say, you know, say you have a 9-month-old and you know some other people with a 9-month-old and you get those 2 9-month-olds together and you measure what your child is doing against the other one. How good of a measurement is that to whether or not your kid is on track? Dr. Galbraith.
I don't think it's an accurate measurement. In general, yeah, you can say, okay, you know, they're both kind of crawling around. And so, you know, that looks good. But if another child is doing something that your child isn't doing, that isn't necessarily something to be alarmed about. You know, if you're really concerned about it, you can go on the web and check out what they're supposed to be doing, or you can go see your primary care provider and have a further assessment. But as you were saying, the range of normal is huge because every child develops at their own rate. And so, you know, your child may, you know, learn to do something sooner than the other child, but the other child may learn to do something different, totally different, sooner than your child. So you really can't compare them act for act. You have to look at the whole picture and see where they are with that development.
And where do the milestones that we're talking about, even though there's this great range of what's normal, but where are the milestones coming from in terms of the research that supports them? You know, there has been, I believe, a whole lot of new findings in terms of development of young children. So maybe Dr. Galbraith, I'll start with you. Could you tell us a little bit about where some of this information is coming from that's helping guide these suggestions about what's normal and what's not?
Well, a lot of this, it just comes from looking at kids, really, and seeing, you know, how they're developing, and also look at children that maybe aren't developing on the right way. And so then you have comparison. So, you know, you have the normal range, which is huge. Like I said, there's lots of different places a child can be in their development. Some kids will develop very rapidly at a certain stage and then slow down and then speed up again. So it's based on normals. So, and, you know, what is normal? It's a range of kids. And so you get a range of development and then you decide, you know, where the vast majority of those kids are in that development at a specific age. And so then you list out the different things that a child is doing. There's all sorts of research right now being done on brain development, and a lot has been discovered. And so, you know, that's been a lot of focus you know, like the Best Beginnings video, showing that a lot of the brain development occurs within the first 3 years of life. You know, it used to be, you know, when I went to medical school way back when, we were taught that the brain was pretty much developed when a child was born. But it's kind of like having the, you know, the pieces in place, but the connections aren't there. And those connections are critical. And that's why there's been so much research on this and so much emphasis on this, because it is a critical time period for development.
And is that, Erin Canavy, with your work at OCS, is that same research where some of these things from the CDC that you've developed into the infant learning program, is that where that stuff's coming from?
Yeah, I think there's been lots of years of observation, as Dr. Galbraith pointed out, that we've known these milestones now for a while. And I know that the CDC did some studies specifically related to their Know the Signs, Act Early campaign and made sure that it normed across the country and across different groups of developing kids. Yeah.
Well, this is Kids These Days. It's a weekly conversation on this station about issues that matter to all Alaskans and focus on family life within our communities. Today, we're talking about the important mental connections babies and young children are making as they grow in their early years. I'll be back with my in-studio guests, Dr. Donna Galbraith and Erin Canavy, in the second half of the hour. This program is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild, a freelance media production organization. Kids These Days is distributed by the Alaska Public Radio Network and recorded at KSKA-FM in Anchorage. We're carried on 7 stations across Alaska, including the listener-supported one you're tuned to right now. We'll take a quick break, but we'll be back with more in-studio conversation, as well as a feature story on one statewide organization that works to connect families in need. Stay with us. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and we'll be right back.
Honey, please don't cry. Listen to me. There's no reason why we shouldn't agree. I hurt your feelings, I apologize. You're the only one that I idolize. Don't cry, baby. Don't cry, baby. Dry your eyes. Be sweethearts again. You know I didn't mean to make you feel blue. Honest.
Next time on Kids These Days, we're looking into a recent phenomenon. More and more kids, sometimes young kids, are being prescribed medications. And they run the gamut from medications created for kids to those intended for adults but given to children. So what's happening here? We'll ask that question and many more. Plus, we'll talk to one doctor who stresses non-pharmaceutical treatments. There's a Dr. KTD on deck. Join us for that next time. This is Kids These Days, and I'm Shanna Sheehy. I'm speaking with Dr. Donna Galbraith of South Central Foundation and Erin Canavy, who's with the state of Alaska. We're talking about early childhood development this hour. I want to start this half of the hour, actually, with asking you, Erin Canavy, to get a little more specific about, we referred to them in general, some of the developmental milestones for these different ages. And, you know, they're broken down into months in the first year of life and then into years after that. But I think it would be useful for our listeners to hear what some of those things are, especially if they're at home caring for an infant or a toddler that are in those ages now. So could you run through those so that we understand them a little better?
Sure. So if we want to talk about the first 3 months, you know, yeah. In the first month, you expect that a child can begin to turn their head, lift their head, and obviously still need support to fully hold up their head, that they're learning how to turn to sound, turn to a human voice, turn to their mother's voice. They might be startled by loud noises. These are all normal kind of developmental pathways that are happening in the brain. And then as the child gets older, looking at the second month, they might begin to control the head a little bit better, be able to move their arms and legs more smoothly, so not that kind of jerky of emotion, can start to hold an object, and is starting to show some interest in sounds, more diverse sounds. So,
And then in the Babies on Track video, there's the observation that when an infant, say, who's still nursing, like a little baby, that the range of vision of a young child is pretty limited, right? It's sort of that same distance from breast to mother's face, right? So they're not even necessarily taking in everything that's in a room. They're really just taking in something that's in a real small field of vision. Isn't that correct? And Dr. Galbraith, maybe you can tell us when, you know, during what period of time is that the case for an infant? And then when does that start to change? They start to see more of their environment.
Well, it makes sense that they can see the face because, you know, breastfeeding, that's pretty much the range, you know, if you can pretend you're holding a child and they're right at the breast and then they can look up and see the face. So if you're holding a child and looking down, they can see your face and see that interact and action. And as they develop, their eyesight increases with time. And then also just you know, what they recognize when they see things and how they put things together in terms of complicated patterns. And so it's all, it's an ongoing process that occurs.
Mm-hmm. And Erin Canavy, how about some other developmental milestones for some of the ages that we were talking about?
Sure. So when you start to look at a six-month-old, you're looking at more more domains. And so are they starting to respond to communication? Are they starting to communicate back? Are they initiating some sounds? Can they roll over? You know, around 6 months, we're starting to see some of these new emerging skills in their gross motor, their physical development. Can they begin to grasp toys and actually hold on to them? So, you know, an infant can't do that very well, but as they get older and gain some control over their hands, you can start to see reaching and grasping for toys and being able to hold on to them. And they really are, as Dr. Galbraith pointed out, really starting to gain some problem-solving skills. And so are they turning to sounds? Are they figuring out how to reach for these toys? Are they trying to get a toy that's out of reach that they can still see, but are they figuring out how to maneuver to get there? And then, of course, the domain that I think is so foundational is this personal and social development. And so are they really starting to, again, kind of, can they notice themselves in a mirror? Are they reaching out to their mother? Are they learning how to self-regulate and self-soothe? These are critical skills in social domains that really are, again, foundational for later learning and later self-regulation and self-control.
And are these also places where, you know, if it's not happening, you can have some of those early warnings like, hey, there might be a problem developing?
Sure. I mean, babies at 6 months who aren't cooing or are relatively silent, there, you know, you might have concerns about hearing there, or there might be some social issues happening, you know, not connecting, or and again, watching communication and yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you mentioned in the first half of the hour that while Alaska adapted the Learn the Signs Act Early initiative that's coming from the CDC to include not just alerting the signs or getting parents and caregivers alerted to signs of possible autism diagnosis, but for all sorts of well-being of the kids. How early, as you said, in the case of 6 months, there's already, like, the child should sort of be learning some of these social skills. How early might a diagnosis of autism be made?
Well, I think I'm seeing some leading research universities able to diagnose kids as early as 12 to 15 months. Up here, I think the age range is much closer to three, late twos, threes, when communication, we have a better kind of idea where kids could and should be communicating, their level of communication. But in some universities, it's getting, I mean, quite young, particularly with siblings of children who are diagnosed with autism.
Mm-hmm.
Early intervention is critical for kids with autism, but I would suggest that it's critical for any kids who are not meeting their milestones, regardless of a diagnosis, even if, you know, if it's a developmental delay, that an intervention really can, and family support can really promote that child's development.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to just emphasize what you're saying because, if you diagnose a child that's having difficulty learning very early on, you can intervene and do all sorts of things. So as we're talking about brain development here, it's happening for every child, even if they have some problems with development. They're still laying down the foundation for their brain so that the more interactions that child has, the better. And so if you if you diagnose a child very early, then you're able to interact more, or intervene more than perhaps you normally would, and make certain the child is stimulated appropriately. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's really important. Usually when you have an infant and you go, and even, you know, toddlers and children, and you go see your provider, your primary care provider, they will actually do the developmental assessment. And you'll usually answer questionnaires, and then they usually score you. And they take into consideration that, you know, the normal range of development. And if somebody's off, and they're just off a little bit, they're just going to watch you, you know, watch that child and have you come back and then assess you again. But if there's a lot of things off, you know, they're probably going to refer you, you know, to get further evaluation.
And so that would be kind of, that's just part and parcel in routine well-child visits. That's
yes.
what you're saying, Dr.
Yes.
So then I want to also pick up on that idea of, you know, intervening. Tell us how it is, and maybe Erin Canavy, you're the right person to answer this question. You know, once there is a need for an intervention or for a child to be considered for a diagnosis, what happens then?
Well, I can speak. So if a child has gone in and seen their primary provider, for example, and they have used a screening tool, they've done kind of developmental surveillance, if they have concerns, if a child is referred to infant learning, I can talk about how that process works. So if a referral comes either from a parent or from a physician or other type of provider, within 45 days, the infant learning program in their region, and we have 17 statewide, will do either a screening, if that seems warranted, or a multidisciplinary evaluation. And so they will bring out licensed or certified folks to do evaluations and to determine if the child does in fact have a moderate to significant developmental delay. If they're eligible for early intervention and infant learning program services, that child will be enrolled, and the family and the team around that child will develop what we call an individualized family service plan, and that will kind of dictate what the intervention is going to look like over the next number of months. And then that plan is revised repeatedly and hopefully often, because kids are hitting those milestones and they're developing rapidly. And then at about 2.5, we will start to offer transition services for that family. And at the age of 3, if they so choose, we will help them transition their child into district-based special education services or other early childhood services that are appropriate for their child.
And so this is, not just unique to the family and then unique to the needs of the child, but also unique maybe to the community and what resources the community has available for children in need. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I see. So the starting point, though, really is, you know, noticing, seeing your family doctor, and then it's normally a family doctor who makes a recommendation to the infant learning program, or is it somebody
It varies.
Else?
I mean, I want to say, I think parents are about 25% of our referrals. Physicians are about 25%.
So a parent can refer, they can call
absolutely.
You up and refer themselves.
Okay. Absolutely. And I would say that there's literature out there that really parents tend to be the first to know if there are things going on with their kids. And often, I think this is specific to children that experience autism, but I think it's 18 months from when the parent first has a concern to the time at diagnosis. So parents know quite early if something's just that they have questions or that they've got concerns, and then it's about that journey of getting to that answer, getting to that diagnosis, if that's appropriate for them.
Which is just more evidence that interacting and really connecting with your child is important, because then you might be that parent who's tipped off way in advance of any kind of diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Kids These Days, and I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm speaking today with Erin Canavy and Dr. Donna Galbraith, and we're talking about early childhood development. Some caregivers may notice that their babies or toddlers are not reaching some of the developmental milestones that we've been talking about today. There are organizations throughout Alaska that work with the state's infant learning program to help these families find assistance for their children. One of those organizations is the Stone Soup Group. They host parent workshops, meet one-on-one with families, and empower those families to help other families who may be struggling. Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez spoke with Wendy Barrett, the Positive Behavioral Support Program Manager there, about how they work with those parents whose children need a little extra help.
Wendy Barrett, thank you for joining us on Kids These Days. Thank you for having me.
You are from the Stone Soup Group, and I want to remind our listeners about the Stone Soup story. So there's a stranger who comes to a village and asks for food, and the villagers say, "We don't have any food," but they really do. They're just hoarding it. And so the stranger says, "Well, I have this stone to make a soup, but it would taste better with a carrot, or it would taste better with an onion." And slowly the villagers begin to contribute one by one something to the pot. And before they know it, they have this delicious soup full of all kinds of vegetables and meats. And on your mission statement, you say that this story directly relates to how the Stone Soup Group operates. So to start, I'd like to know, how does that story relate to what you do?
The story relates in that we're an advocacy information and referral service for families, and we build collaborative services with our families and community and statewide providers.
So you're a statewide group.
And yes.
Today we're talking about meeting developmental milestones for young children. And sometimes parents will find that maybe their child isn't quite getting there to those developmental milestones.
Absolutely.
And maybe they'll seek out services like the Stone Soup Group to get a little extra assistance. So, Wendy, tell us how they find you and then how you might do an initial intake with a family like that.
We get referrals from, a wide spectrum, doctors, medical professionals, the school districts, professionals will refer, families to us. We also have families who just, don't know where else to go and walk in the front door and say, "What do you do and how can you help?" And what we do at that point is actually connect them with a parent navigator. And a parent navigator is a parent or family member who, is also, a professional in our organization who has experienced somebody in their family who has special needs, whether it be their own child or a family member. And they begin to help these parents actually access the services that they need for, their own child and their own family.
So it's really a peer model. It's someone who's been through it, who can empathize,
yes,
knows where they're coming from, who helps them navigate the services that are available to them.
Yes.
Okay. And I noticed that in the FAQ, the frequently asked questions section on your website, there's a question and it says, "Can a parent navigator go with me to school, to an IEP or an individual education plan meeting with
yes.
the teacher?" And they do that?
They do that. We have several avenues of services in which our parent navigators work. We have our Parent Training and Information Center, which, as you just mentioned, is a parent navigator who can go with that parent to the school district, to those IEP meetings, can accompany them to, the medical assessments, any of those areas where they feel like they need a little additional support.
What are some of the developmental delays that you're able to sort of assist families with?
With the Autism Center, we actually work with the Providence Neurodevelopmental Clinics and the Infant Learning Program from the very beginning when those children are initially assessed, and help the families to, connect with, whatever service providers they might need within their communities. And from that, we just follow it all the way through and can connect them with, care coordination if they need that, for a long-term care, or the educational piece, if they need, the early intervention assessments or an IEP, mm-hmm. at some point. So
maybe later in their school career.
Right, right.
And you'll work with families whose children have a diagnosis and also with families who maybe their child does not have a diagnosis.
Absolutely.
Yet.
We get calls all the time where parents, say, my child is having some challenging behaviors. What do I do? Where do I go? Again, we try to connect them with a parent navigator. And get those services started for them.
You are able to teach workshops and offer workshops throughout the community that parents, caregivers, professionals are welcome to come to. What are you teaching at those workshops?
Right now, we're teaching the Positive Solutions curriculum, which is a part of the pyramid model from the Center for Social and Emotional Development of Children. And those classes are for parents, they're for professionals. We do it as more of a family support group.
What might mom or dad or grandma or teacher or auntie learn when they come in and join you for the evening?
We give them different or try to help them, you know, come up with different strategies that might work, you know, in their home for their child, including, you know, things that will fit into their daily routine. You know, if Johnny doesn't want to go to bed at night, mm-hmm. you know, and you're having those tantrums, and how to, you know, work with, you know, those transitions before bedtime. We look at the environmental factors. We also look at, you know, if the child's got, you know, other medical issues going on, or, you know, just what is the basis of the behavior for that child, and help the parent to put, you know, a good plan in place as far as strategies go to deal with those behaviors and hopefully decrease those behaviors so that, you know, things are smoother during the whole family environment.
And I want to note, too, that your website, stonesoupgroup.org?
Yes.
It is a fantastic resource for caregivers or anyone really to look up information about where they can find resources in the state of Alaska.
Absolutely.
To help them, sources for autism spectrum disorders, for fetal alcohol mm-hmm. Spectrum disorders. So it's really a great clearinghouse for people to go, even if they don't choose to work directly with you, or maybe it's just a way for them.
Absolutely. There's resources on there. We, you know, build collaborative services with our community partners as well, and some of those resources are on there as well, like you said, just for the information and referral piece. We also have a lending library in our office, so, you know, parents can come in. They are able to check those materials out and use them, you know, even on their own, to be able to handle, you know, the situation in their home.
Okay. Wendy Barrett, thank you for the work that you're doing with the Stone Soup Group, and thank you for speaking with us on Kids These Days.
Thank you very much.
Wendy Barrett from the Stone Soup Group spoke with our producer, Sarah Gonzalez. As always, we'll connect you to this resource via our website at kidsthesedays.org. And Erin Canavy and Dr. Donna Galbraith are joining me today in the studio to talk about early childhood development and developmental milestones today. And since, you know, Wendy Barrett just referenced that from her organization's website, stonesoupgroup.org, you can find other support organizations across the state. I'm wondering, Erin, since you work in a statewide manner, are you aware of some of those that might be in other places in Alaska that you might be able to mention?
Oh, boy. So the Alaska Family and Youth Network, I think that's a network of support for families who have children that have behavioral health issues or concerns. You know, as Stone Soup mentioned, they are a statewide organization, and they actually are affiliated with infant learning through federal mechanisms. And they are our only PTI, Parent Training Information Center, in the state. But okay. I do think that we have an active Family Voices chapter in Alaska, so that would be another resource for parents to find.
And so there are resources out there. And I wonder, you know, right now the three of us women are sitting in a studio in Anchorage, but I'm wondering how easy is it in smaller communities in Alaska, in Southeast communities, in Kodiak, like how easy is it to find these resources, especially if when you suspect and then it's confirmed that your kid is having difficulties, it might be kind of an emotional time, I would think. And then there you are also having to do the work to find out how to get the help you need. So what advice might you have for caregivers if they're in a smaller community and looking for those resources?
I think that in smaller communities, sometimes it's limited. And if you get actually down to a village level, sometimes there isn't a lot of resources. And so you'll have to come to town actually to, you know, have the diagnosis and or further evaluation to see if there is a diagnosis. And then you could be tied into services within the community, and usually it's a larger community, but they can support you back in your home community. And of course, school is always a big support. nowadays with the web, there's all sorts of resources that you can access and information that you can learn about also. And a lot of these programs that we've been talking about, especially the state, they reference other websites that you can go to learn different things. So the more rural you are, the more difficult it is, but there are resources out there.
And I would just mention, I always try to put a plug in. We do have a parent warm line in Alaska, and so parents can dial 211 and actually get directory information about early childhood programs in their community or other resources. And then as Stone Soup mentioned, they do parent navigation, and they can do that. I think that they've got some parent navigation capability in Fairbanks, and they will work with parents at the community level to help them find those resources and get them connected if they do, in fact, need to come into a larger hub area or come into Anchorage for those kinds of diagnostic services, for mm-hmm. example.
Do you know whether or not the warm line, is there a way to find that online as well?
I believe so. I think you can probably Google 211 Alaska or warm line, and okay. It's, you know, just a phone call away as well.
Right, and we'll do that for you on Kids These Days, and we'll link to that from our website as well at kidsthesedays.org. Dr. Donna Galbraith, let's go back to Babies on Track, as we mentioned earlier in the hour and heard from our reporter, Jessica Cochran. There's a new effort by Best Beginnings Alaska to have these movie premieres that are going on all across the state, running throughout the rest of February and into March, where different people, individuals, groups, in small settings and large settings are premiering this 13-minute video, which you're a part of, called Babies on Track. I want to go back to the track part of it, because this is an acronym to help caregivers remember how it is that they can interact with their kids. And you don't have to remember, Dr. Galbraith. I've got notes right here, so I'm going to repeat those and what they are. So track, T-R-A-C-K-S. So the T is talk. The R is respond. The A is ask questions. The C is connect. And the K is keep at it. And the S is sing and tell stories. I just want to ask you this question, because these seem like things that, you know, people maybe already know. People can certainly be reminded of them again. And some people might be learning them for the first time. But who exactly would you say this video is intended to reach? Like, is it intended to bring people together who care for young kids and understand the importance of interaction? Or, you know, what do you think the purpose of a video like this is really getting at? Who's it aimed at?
It's aimed at the caregivers of children. And it's to help educate those caregivers that it's the interactions, and it doesn't have to be, you know, real fancy interactions. You don't, you know, have to have a PhD to play with your child. You just need to play with your child and talk with your child. And it can be silly things. You know, you can, while you're cooking dinner, you can be, you know, dancing with your vegetables or fruit or something and talking with the child. Or if your child is, you know, playing with their food, you can ask them questions about it. So it's taking it down to the very basic level and saying that any interaction is very important with a child in terms of brain development.
And is this educational effort at all happening because this isn't happening in Alaska? I mean, like, it's coming down to a basic level, and you're talking about interacting and talking to your child. So is there evidence that this isn't happening?
Well, I think in some situations there's evidence of that. You know, if you, you know, look at adverse childhood experiences, and there's a lot of literature out on that, and it actually shows that the number of adverse childhood experiences that occur can have a direct impact on the child. So it can actually decrease the number of connections within the brain as they're developing. And it actually has long-term effects, so that there's an increased incidence of obesity, diabetes, cancer, and heart disease in adults from adverse childhood experiences. The other, you know, piece that's in there is that for a while, it used to be that, you know, they would tell parents to not hold your baby so you don't spoil the child. And that was the wrong advice. You should be holding your baby. You should be playing with your baby. And it's not spoiling your child to do that. It's very important to do that. It's actually crucial for brain development, to maximize brain development.
And you mentioned, I'm sorry, go ahead, Erin.
I was just going to say, I think it's also important just to recognize how busy families are, particularly families with young children, and that families are stressed in this kind of an economy. And I think you can't repeat or empower parents enough to do these very simple, make the time to do these very simple acts, because I think time goes by quickly and we are so busy that it's important to just be intentional, I think, with young kids.
So instead of being distracted with whatever happened during the day when you're in the kitchen making dinner and your child is at the table or on the floor, you can talk about what you're doing, and that's interaction that might not otherwise be there if you're off in your own thoughts kind of thing.
Yeah, and it actually helps the parent because it helps relieve stress. I mean, if you get down to the child's level, it takes you off of all the things that you're thinking about. And if you actually start playing with your child, it actually allows you to be a child too. So it's actually emotionally good for the parent to do that.
Play is good for everybody.
Yes. Be a child.
And so Dr. Galbraith, you mentioned the adverse childhood experiences study, and I'm glad that you brought that up. We have talked about that previously on Kids These Days, and we also have links to that study on our website, and we'll make those available as well when you visit kidsthesedays.org right now. And in terms of, you know, adverse childhood experiences, this would be the opposite of interaction, right? It would be neglect or,
right,
the worst cases, abuse. So avoiding those things has not just an immediate impact on children who are young today, but also on ultimately their health as adults.
Yes, that's right. And actually, you know, knowing that and avoiding those situations, or getting out of those situations, is very important for children. People didn't realize that, you know, they figured that children recover, and everybody does recover, but there are lasting effects that are hard to recover from. And, you know, if you look at some of the health risk factors or health factors that we have going on in the U.S. right now, some of them are related to the adverse childhood experiences.
Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that children, if they're not talking, they're not hearing or understanding. I think we've learned a lot more about young children, mm-hmm, and their development, and that how that environment really does impact on multiple levels.
So you're saying just because they're not speaking doesn't mean they're not hearing.
And learning and not understanding.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're little sponges. That's
Absolutely.
Sort of been my observation.
Taking
a lot
it all
of information
in.
Going in. Well, we just have a couple minutes left, so I'd like to give each of you an opportunity to share any last thoughts you might have about developmental milestones of our littlest kids here before we wrap up the program today. I'll start with you, Dr. Galbraith.
Well, as I was saying, you know, don't be afraid to play with your child. I think that's the most important thing. And, you know, it's nice that it's so simple in terms of brain development. You can do it. Any person can do it. So it's just a matter of interacting with your child and playing.
And Erin Canavy?
Yeah, I mean, and if you have any concerns, don't be afraid to reach out, to ask questions. And there are lots of different organizations around the state, from different parks and recs and park service initiatives around parent and child groups and getting outside with kids, and more formalized supports. And that if you have any questions, reach out.
Well, that is all the time that we have today. I'd like to thank both of you ladies for spending the hour with Kids These Days. Erin Canavy is the program manager for the State of Alaska's Early Intervention Program. She works in the Office of Children's Services. And Dr. Donna Galbraith is a family physician and works for South Central Foundation. Thanks again. It was really a pleasure to be with you today.
Thank you.
You can find links to the Babies on Track webpage from our website. We'll also post the stories Jessica and Sarah put together for today's show. And you can easily find one of Jessica's previous pieces. She reported on PIC, that's Program for Infants and Children, and we talked about it this hour. Also, we'll link you to the many resources we mentioned on the show today. So for one-stop clicking, everything in one simple place, go to kidsthesedays.org. Jessica Cochran is our regular contributor and reported today from Anchorage. Sarah Gonzalez is our producer, web content editor, and business manager. We thank the kind people who assist us at Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, Dave Waldron, BD Trentina, Constance Huff, and others. Our theme music is written, performed, and produced by Lost Lander. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Thanks for being with me today, and I'll see you next time.
Kids These Days is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild. The opinions shared on the program are those of the host, guest, and contributors and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KTD producers, partners, or funders. Major funding for Kids These Days comes from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. The program is made in partnership with KSKA-FM in Anchorage and the Alaska Public Radio Network. Find out more about Kids These Days anytime at kidsthesedays.org.